All right, our Flames Talk post-game show. Let's get it underway on this Wednesday night. The Flames play in game two of a four-game road trip, and they fall 2-1 in overtime against the Detroit Red Wings at Little Caesars Arena. No five-on-five goals, a couple of power play goals. Flames do battle back to get the late power play goal to get this thing to overtime, and then a power play four-on-three goal for the Red Wings ends up winning it. Lucas Raymond with the OT winner. Flames Talk post-game on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcast. Phone lines open at 403-240-4444. Text line open at 960-960. It's Pat Steinberg and Megan Mickelson with us from Little Caesars Arena as well, the color voice of the Flames. Mick, there just was not a whole lot happening at 5-on-5. Both teams making sure of that. And from a Flames standpoint, it was like skating through mud tonight trying to get to the middle of the ice. They had such a challenge to get to the middle, but they score a power play goal late, and in a game like this, it's the power play that can sometimes be the difference between 0 and 1 point, and in a lot of ways tonight, that's exactly what it was.
Yeah, I have to give the Red Wings credit. I thought that they played a really solid, tight-checking game, and coming into this one, Derek Lalonde talked about wanting to be better in the battles, winning the battles, and just playing with more intensity, and you could see that. They were a desperate hockey team in this game and just really didn't give the Flames a lot of room at all, but like the Flames start as, I mean, I do think that you cannot rely solely on your power play to produce your offense, and just 5-on-5, not enough high danger opportunities. So regardless of who you're playing, it's finding ways to get to the middle of the ice, get to those high danger areas, and you know, whether it's getting shots from there or you're picking up rebounds from point shots, whatever it is, but just finding ways to generate a little bit more offense from there. And yeah, it's just, I mean, it's tough, right, to get into, you get into the flow of the game, and then there's the penalties, and you're hesitant. I think we saw a little bit of that too, hesitation in their game, and not playing as physical as they normally would, probably afraid to take penalties, and it's kind of ironic that that's what shot them in the foot at the end of the game.
Yeah, they took the 3 penalties in the first period, none until overtime, then the too many men that ended up resulting in the Lucas Raymond overtime winner. Mick, let's select tonight's hardest working Flame. Which way are you leaning on tonight's hardest working Flame?
Well, I thought Nazem Kadri, he had a really solid game. He was, you know, dangerous, played really well in terms of, you know, I think when he's struggled a little bit, he's turned the puck over too much, but thought that he did a really good job in that area as well. But you know, he continues to try to generate offense. You look at his numbers, 9 shot attempts. So continuing to drive the play in that regard. But the guy who really stood out to me was Connor Zary. Yeah. And I think it was huge. He drew 2 penalties and then obviously scoring the goal that he did. And you can see that the passion and the intensity that he played with in this game tonight. And I always love to see that. So I'm going to give it to Connor Zary.
Connor Zary with a big power play goal is your hardest working Flame following a 2-1 overtime loss in Detroit. Last one for you, Mick. And that's, I asked you on Monday following the loss in Ottawa where the Flames scored a power play goal. Well, they score a big one, and you know, we always hear it's not how many, but when. Well, this is the best example of that maybe all season. It's not how many you get, but when you score them on their 4th power play of the night, and with about 12 seconds to go on that power play, a nice job from Mackenzie Weegar to draw everybody towards him, feed to Zary, who walks in and rips it past Cam Talbot. The power play's now scored in 5 straight, and it's really starting to get some wheels here, isn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, Kevin Ball, he talked about the entries, and I thought that those started to improve actually, you know, before, you know, this, they started on this crazy streak, which has been awesome. But you see the, when they do get in the zone, their puck movement is a lot quicker. And so what that does is it doesn't allow the penalty kill to kind of get set up in their structure. And you move the pucks to areas where you can get quality shots off from. And they're definitely doing that, but also making really smart decisions on, you know, when do you pass, when do you shoot. But if you look at, and I thought this was pretty crazy, coming into this game, their shots on the power play per 2 minutes, the last 4 games, again, coming into this one, had increased 74.7%. Slot shots per 2 minutes on the power play had increased 41.9%. So, I mean, if you're getting that many more shots off, that comes from those entries, comes from the quick puck movement, comes from the decisions on when to shoot, when to pass, getting the pucks to those areas, but then getting the shots off as well, you're obviously going to find some success.
Yeah, and now five straight games with a power play goal for the Flames as they get ready to take on Columbus on Friday afternoon. Thank you, Mick. Great stuff, as always, hey?
Thanks, Pat.
That is Megan Mickelson as we sign off from Detroit on this Wednesday night following a 2-1 overtime loss. Flames fall against the Red Wings. They're now 0-1-1 on this road trip so far. By the way, we were just talking about the power play. That was our marquee matchup on the pregame show tonight, brought to you by Country Hills Toyota. Thought the power play looked a little bit more like the power play we had seen earlier in the year when it was a real weakness for the team. But then I thought, and that was on the first two opportunities, and I thought it kind of got better as the night went along. And when it's all said and done, the Flames score a huge power play goal in this game, and all three of their high danger slot opportunities, their best chances on the power play, came on their 2/3 period power plays. And it's funny, you know, both teams come away seemingly upset about the last two penalty calls, but I don't think either team really has a leg to stand on. I know Dylan Larkin was pissed about the faceoff violation penalty that led to the Zary goal, but he clearly on the replay put his hand on the puck, and that's a penalty. So that was called. And I know the Flames are not happy about the too many men penalty, but there were five guys on the ice, and one of them was like 12 feet away, at least on the camera angle I saw. The one guy was 12 away from the bench, so that's a too many men on the ice penalty. So Red Wings were pissed about the game-tying goal and the penalty that resulted in that. Flames are pissed about the game-winning goal and the penalty that led to that. And on both cases, I thought they were clear calls. I don't know. Maybe we'll find out a little bit more from Ryan Huska when we hear from him in just a couple of minutes. But I did think it was pretty cut and dried on both of those ones. And when it's all said and done, four penalties aside, four for the Red Wings and four for the Flames in this game. But I did think the power play got better as the night went along. And it is, in a lot of ways, I did not love Calgary's 5-on-5 game, at least when it came to their possession game and what they were doing offensively. Still generally pretty solid defensively, only allowed the 9 slot opportunities at 5-on-5, but only generated the 5 themselves. Didn't love Calgary's 5-on-5 game. And as Mick said, a lot of credit goes to Detroit in what they did. But yeah, if you're going to be in a game like that where it's so tight 5-on-5 and where you're not generating a ton 5-on-5, if you get 4 power plays, including 2 in the third period in a 1-goal game, you better score on at least one of them. Flames did, and that tied the game with less than 3 minutes to go. And that was our marquee matchup brought to you by Country Hills Toyota. It's time to Toyota at the giant Country Hills Toyota. The 2024 Toyota truck clear out is on. Get financing as low as 0% OAC with 0 down and no payments until May 2025. Flames lose 2-1 in overtime to the Red Wings. We are underway on your Flames Talk post-game show. It's Pat Steinberg along with you with the phone lines open at 403-240-4444. Text line open at 960-960. Give us a call. Fire us a text. We'll get to all of that around the corner, and we've got lots to break down on this Wednesday night. 2 down, 2 to go on this 4-game road trip. Flames Talk post-game's underway, and this is Calgary Flames Hockey on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
The Flames Talk postgame show starts now on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Your final score from Detroit tonight. The Flames fall 2-1 in overtime against the Detroit Red Wings. It's Pat Steinberg along with you on your Flames Talk postgame show. And it's time to go from the Flames dressing room, brought to you by Canyon Plumbing and Heating. Replace your furnace with upgrades like state-of-the-art Wi-Fi thermostats and indoor air quality solutions. Financing options available. For more info, visit canyonplumbing.com. Let's hear from head coach Ryan Huska. His postgame thoughts right now following this 2-1 overtime loss in Detroit.
Coach, you find on a big one late, obviously, at the point, but how would you assess the night overall?
I thought it was a hard game both ways. I mean, there wasn't, again, a typical game for us. There wasn't a lot of room on the ice, and I'm happy the guys stuck with it. You know, we've talked a lot about our power play, and now we're talking about it in a positive way. So that was a big goal for us tonight.
I mean, early part, first 5 minutes seemed like, you know, you had your feet in budget and you obviously get a couple of penalties, but what about the response after that stretch?
I think it's the way the game was. There wasn't a lot of room, 5-on-5. So their power play scored for them, and that was the difference in this game. But as I said, I'm not disappointed with the effort at all.
Dale, it's sure a good game for you guys to begin with for the first two periods to keep you in it and really force that.
Who did?
Dan.
Yeah, Dan made saves again for us tonight. So I thought he played well. He looked in control. He looked confident and calm tonight.
Any doubt in your mind, you should look forward. I mean, Zary was right in the middle of everything tonight and got you the big goal. He's a guy who, for this organization, you're going to be counting on him for the biggest moments moving forward for a long time, are you not?
Well, I think that's the hope with all your young players that, you know, they're going to watch some of the older guys around them and they're going to take steps along the way. So that's part of our job as a staff, is to make sure they develop. And it's part of the player's job to make sure they're putting in the work. And Connor has done that this year. So his game has taken steps. And we talked about before, it just keeps getting harder as the season goes on. So it's going to be a really good challenge for him to keep improving.
Okay. There you go. That is head coach Ryan Huska post-game in Detroit on this Wednesday night following a 2-1 overtime loss at the hands of the Red Wings. Game two of a four-game road trip that continues on Friday. And that is from the Flames dressing room, brought to you by Canyon Plumbing and Heating. Replace your furnace with upgrades like state-of-the-art Wi-Fi thermostats and indoor air quality solutions. Financing options available. For more info, visit canyonplumbing.com. It's Pat Steinberg along with you on your Flames Talk post-game show. One of the last questions you heard there was about Dan Vladar, who got the start in net, picks up the overtime loss, but thought he was very, very strong tonight. It is time for tonight's Save of the Game, brought to you by Shane Holmes, and Dan Vladar's Save of the Game comes in period number two.
Hawk slides up the near boards and is scooped up by Sider. And after a good shift, the Flames will make a change. There's a stretch pass, Tarasenko, a slap shot, rebound, and Berggren is denied by Vladar.
And that ends up being one of the 25 stops made by Dan Vladar tonight. That is his save of the game, brought to you by Shane Holmes. For every save a Flames goaltender makes, Shane Holmes donates $5 to Kidsport Calgary. Visit ShaneHolmes.com, the better way to build. And you know, honestly, I thought it was another quality Flames goaltending start. I thought that Vladar did exactly what he needed to do. He has had a 1,000 5-on-5 save percentage in this game. Nothing he could do on the DeBrincat power play goal. And, you know, beat clean on the Raymond overtime winner. But Lucas Raymond, good player, able to walk in and rip it past him. So, I had no problem with Dan Vladar and the way he played tonight. Thought he was great through regulation, and then an overtime goal that ends up beating him. Yeah, it was clean, but a great shot by Lucas Raymond. So, hey, the Flames continue to get really solid goaltending from both their guys. Tonight was no different. You're probably going back to Dustin Wolf. Now, I don't know what they do. They probably go Wolf on Friday, Vladar on Saturday would be my guess. But, you know, you could easily make an argument, I guess, for the other. But it would make the most sense, if you ask me, to go from Vladar tonight, Wolf on Friday in Columbus, and then rock with Vladar on Saturday to wrap up the road trip against the Pittsburgh Penguins. We'll see what the Flames end up doing. But definitely a night where the Flames can talk about getting another quality goaltending performance. Just what I'm starting to wonder a little bit about before we hit the text line and the phone lines here, what I'm starting to wonder a little bit about is how much is Calgary's lack of scoring and difficulty generating quality offense, like how much is that going to become more and more of a large hurdle to get over? Like in this game, the Flames did not make life very easy on Cam Talbot until Jonathan Huberdeau's screen, which I'm watching right now, Jonathan Huberdeau's screen on Cam Talbot on the Zary game tying goal. They're going to have to start making life more difficult on opposing goaltenders and opposing teams. And right now it feels like it's too easy for teams to keep the Flames to the outside. It's too easy for teams to keep the Flames on the perimeter, and thus it's making life really easy on goalies. And if you're having a difficult time getting to the middle with the puck, you can still get bodies to the net and make it difficult on opposing goalies that way. Kind of set like Zary's shot was, it was an outside-ish shot. But what it does is, with Huberdeau in front, it still makes it a pretty difficult opportunity. Just watching it again, Zeri's, it comes from the outside. That's a top of the circle shot, or actually outside the top of the circle. But because Huberdeau's in front, you can get an outside shot and it looks a little bit more dangerous. So if the Flames are having a hard time getting to the middle of the ice with the puck, get some bodies to the middle of the ice into the crease area and make it difficult on opposing goaltenders that way. But that's now 20 straight games without scoring more than three goals. 0 5-on-5 goals in this game tonight for the Flames. That is something that I am starting to wonder a little bit more about, how much of a large hurdle that's going to be for them going forward. That said, on the flip side, more quality goaltending like they got from Vladar tonight, like they've gotten all year from Wolf, and honestly what they've gotten from both goalies all year, and the Flames continuing to defend the way that they did and have, they're going to have an opportunity to still be in games. They're going to be playing in a lot of one-goal games. That was their 11th one-goal game in 23 outings this year. They're going to be in a lot of those going forward, and I think this team is pretty comfortable and understands that that's going to be the case, and the more that they play in them, the more comfortable they're going to be in them. Just on this given night, they only get the 1 point and don't pick up the right result in that one goal game. Let's get to the text line for the first time tonight at 960-960. Let's get to it, as the phone lines are also open at 403-240-4444. This one comes from Kyle. Pat, not the most exciting game tonight. Then again, I've never found Detroit to have exciting games. It's no secret I dislike Huberdeau, but I've refrained from commenting on him this season, mainly because I'm trying to be more positive, but he's bloody paperweight. I just don't know why Huska continues to put him on during significant moments. Sure, he's their scoring leader, but only three of those goals were from him shooting the puck, not just bouncing off of him. He's the biggest liability on the ice and the two dumbest penalties tonight. Players have off games, but he's been having an off game for three seasons. Win, is it enough? Second, remember when I asked about checking from behind and why it's not called? My point was made again tonight. The calls tonight were suspect. That wasn't too many men. Anyways, I'm being a negative Nancy. They still got a point. Have a good night. That comes from Kyle. Again, and I'm not even trying to be contrarian on this. Just on the one angle that I saw, it looked like there were five guys on the ice for sure. Now, you've got that buffer area where you've got the change area, but it looked like one of them was in the area and the other wasn't, and the Red Wings started to turn it back up ice. And as soon as the other team starts to turn it back up ice, they're usually going to call too many men. So I didn't come away thinking that was a bogus call. I didn't think they got robbed on that call myself. I thought it was legit as the Dylan Larkin penalty, which led to the Zeri power play goal, which the Red Wings were all upset about, but was clearly a penalty. So again, I've only seen the one angle on the too many men, but it looked like on a 3-on-3, there were five guys on the ice, and one of those, or four of those five, were outside of the change area, which is legal. So I don't know. And maybe I missed a replay as I was, because I've got a lot of other duties. So maybe I looked down and missed another replay, or maybe you saw it differently, and that's fair. But I can only go on what I saw and what I've got my eyes on so far. This reads, they can't escape the Weidman curse. Well, that's silliness. Each team got four penalties tonight. If it was another nine penalty night, I still wouldn't believe in the Weidman curse. I never did believe in it, but that was a decade ago. Even if it did exist, it doesn't anymore. Scotty in Victoria, that was one of the most frustrating games I've watched this season until the Zeri goal, but then got frustrating again in overtime. What was that too many men penalty? Total baloney, Pat. Vladar deserved that win. I'm very frustrated. I hope you have a better night. I didn't think the Flames played all that well tonight, especially 5-on-5. I thought that the team that carried, and no, it was close. It wasn't like it was dominant from Detroit, and Vladar stole them a point. But I felt like it was a night where the Flames didn't have a ton at 5-on-5. And it looks like there's a lot of people who don't like the too many men. So maybe I'm in the minority on that. And maybe I'll need to take a look at another look at it. Again, all I can go on is the one look that I saw. This from Seth. Pat, do we really think this team could make a playoff run? Don't get me wrong. I like them. They're plucky. They work hard and are getting good goaltending. They just don't have the guns to go far. They've barely managed 20 shots on net against one of the worst defenses in the league tonight. Here's my issue. I'm tired of cheering for the plucky underdog. I've been a Flames fan for a quarter of a century. I've never had had the chance to cheer for a top 10 center. I've only seen the other side of the second round once. It's like every offseason, we all agree they need to draft high and skill. They need to draft high-end skill and rebuild. Then the moment they go on a winning streak and a couple of young guys look good, we all lose our objectivity and just ride the vibes. Does this make me a bad fan? Maybe it does, but I'm tired. Anyways, Zeri and Vladar were really good tonight. Sorry for being a downer. That comes from Seth.
I agree. Both Zeri and Vladar were strong tonight. I don't know if that makes you a bad fan, because I know there are plenty who think the same way. And do I think this team has a Stanley Cup run in them as constructed? I don't. Could they make the playoffs? Sure. And then once you've got a chip and a chair, then you can rattle off a series win or two, and that happens seemingly every year. But do I think this is a cup-winning roster as of right now? If I'm being perfectly honest with you, no, I do not. It doesn't have a number one center. Goaltending can get you really deep in a playoff run, and could I see Dustin Wolf getting in a zone and being unbeatable for a stretch of 3, 4, 5 weeks? Yeah, damn right I could. And that can win you some games, as can Calgary's strong defending and team defense. That also can make playoff series that seem lopsided on paper a whole lot more close and maybe shift to the other side. And we've seen that many, many times. But do I think this is a cup-winning team? No, probably not. What else we got here at 960? There's some that I can't read. I'm just going through some of these tonight. This from Bert in Calgary. Backlund one shot, Coleman one shot, Huberdeau zero shots, Lomberg one shot, Coronado one shot. That's not good enough. The extra point's a gift. That comes from Bert in Calgary. This reads at 960. Holy, there's just a lot of one-liners. This from Nathan in Renfrew. The Flames are stuck with the same kryptonite as the past few years, not beating teams below them in the standings. Obviously, they need to stay out of the box more to see success, but they can still have a successful road trip if they win the back-to-back, but needing to win both halves of a back-to-back is usually not a recipe for success. This says, I'd like to see from Mike, I'd like to see the Flames make a couple of changes, bring up a couple players from the farm, inject some new life into the offense. Kuzmenko should be out. Well, you don't have a lot of options in that regard with waivers and 23-man rosters and so on and so forth. The cap's not an issue, but there is still a roster cap. You can still only carry 23 on your active roster. So it's not like they can just send a bunch of guys down and bring a bunch of guys up that easily. That being said, I did think Kuzmenko was relatively invisible once again. I loved Kadri in this game. I thought Pospisil had some real jump as well, but otherwise, that line, I thought Kuzmenko was kind of the guy missing in the effectiveness side of things. And if they were to sit Kuzmenko, who now has one goal in 23 games, at some point, that wouldn't be a shock, and I wouldn't be against it. The guy that you could bring in would be Klapka, give you a little bit of spark in that regard, at least when it comes to what the roster looks like right now. This reads, wasn't a bad game. Once again, too many penalties. Huberdeau call was no good. Anyway, when you speak of Gaudreau, can you please stop saying, I'm not going to read that. I'm not going to continue reading that. That has nothing to do with the game itself and has nothing to do with anything, and was going to border into disrespectful things, so I don't feel like reading that. This reads, Pat, unfortunately, the Flames did not play an intelligent game. After 9 penalties the game prior, you'd think the mindset would be error on the side of caution. Instead, 3 more penalties in the first period. If you look at the calls, they were all legit and bad penalties on Calgary's part. Subsequently, Detroit scored on the power play, was uphill from there. Kudos for tying it up, but another penalty in overtime and another power play goal for the Wings. So it was a special teams game and not a very intelligent game on the Flames' part. Stay out of the box, boys. Your penalty kill isn't good enough. That was a cheap call on the too many men, though. That's on that text at 960 from Ross in Hanson Ranch. Ash writes, another low-scoring affair that's confirming more and more the Flames may need to explore a trade. What are your thoughts on a rumored trade involving Kuzmenko to the Bruins for a second-round pick and centers Morgan Geeky and Georgi Mrkalov? I don't think there is any way that Kuzmenko is getting you even one of those things at this stage right now. If I'm wrong on that, then I'd love to be wrong, and that would be absolute highway robbery from Craig Conroy right now. I don't think Kuzmenko's getting you a second round pick. I don't think Kuzmenko's getting you Geeky at this point. Like, Kuzmenko is borderline untradeable as it stands right now. So I love that trade for the Flames. I just don't know if that's a trade that is, I don't know where that's being rumored. And I'm not saying it's not. I just haven't seen that. That seems very unrealistic to me, though, Ash, just based on what we've seen from Kuzmenko so far this year. This from Jordan in Coquitlam. Don't have a lot to say, so won't take up a phone spot. I thought Vladar played really well again, made some good saves. Maybe it was just me, but Coronado looked a little all over the place, although he was still working hard. Glad Zeri got one in there. This reads from Jay. I think Vladar should get the start against Columbus, being it's kind of a big game as it's a Johnny night and Vladar played with them. They had a great relationship. Wolf can play Saturday. Your thoughts on that? That's from Jay in Silverado. I actually like the opposite and the sentimental stuff. Fair enough. And maybe that is what they want. Just from a rest standpoint, you get Vladar the extra day. It's a little bit of a quicker turnaround from a night game to an afternoon game on Friday afternoon. So I would go Wolf, Vladar. Don't know what they're going to day, what they're going to do rather for the games Friday and Saturday. There you go on the text line at 960-960. Actually, one more from Jeff in Lethbridge who says, kind of a strange game. Penalties were the biggest factor on the outcome. Kuzmenko's very lucky to still be in the lineup. With the Flames having such a hard time scoring, he has to be in the healthy scratch crosshairs. The Flames still continue to play to their identity of solid goaltending and solid defense, but if they continue to struggle on offense, I could see them sliding more and more towards the loss column. That comes from Jeff in Lethbridge. Hey, keep your texts coming at 960-960 on this Wednesday night. Flames fall 2-1 in overtime to the Detroit Red Wings. It's Pat Steinberg along with you. This is your Flames Talk post-game show on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. The phone lines are open at 403-240-4444. And the text line's open at 960-960. Let's go to the phone lines for the first time tonight as the Flames fall in overtime to start off this road trip. It's one regulation loss and one overtime loss. Next up, Columbus on Friday. And first up on the phone lines is Kyle. What's going on, Kyle?
Oh, hey, how's it going? Second time now.
Well, what's going on?
Not so bad, you.
I'm doing all right.
I think we could start with the game. I mean, I think those penalties at the start were brutal. But I don't think the Flames have ever been a team that really lets themselves down or gives up early. But there was some flair there. And, you know, I think they're playing like 4 second lines, which is good. And I feel like that's good for even playoffs. But old-time hockey fundamentals, you know, getting the guy to screen the goal is should be a huge part of their game. And I feel like even having Klapko on that fourth line would be a game changer.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think that Klapko does help in that regard, although I don't know if he's going to see a ton of power play time. I will say Huberdeau getting in Talbot's eyes, a big reason he doesn't make that stop on the Zeri game tying goal. So, I do think if you're going to be a team that is having a hard time, and it's all opponent dependent as well, but if it's going to be a hard time getting to the middle of the ice, more traffic in front of opposing goaltenders can help you be a little bit more effective for sure.
Oh yeah. I thought they were, honestly, Detroit's man on man was just a good defense and they were just really anticipating lanes and they really had Calgary's number. I thought, going into it, they said that they were going to be a hard team to play against, and they just looked like they had us at every turn, I felt. Mm-hmm. And that penalty at the end, I would have been excited to go to shootout. I mean, we still got the point, but I thought the rule was when you touch the puck and if there's too many men on your side, because technically no Flames player touched it, and there was only three guys out when the Flames did kind of make contact with the puck.
If you have if you've got more players on the ice than what is permitted at that time was three, and you know, more than one of the, like, more than the plus one or plus one or whatever is outside of the change area where it's permitted, then it's a too many men. That's what I saw. Doesn't matter if they touch the puck. If you've got eight guys on the ice and on 5-on-5 and three of them are outside of the change area, that's still too many men.
Yeah, I guess I could see that. I mean,
that's all I'm saying is that I saw that. And again, it was kind of a back angle, so you know you don't maybe have the full on depth perception. But from my angle, it looked like there was definitely five on the ice. One of them was in the change area or the area where you're allowed to make the change on the fly. But the second one looked like was well out of it, and that would be your plus one. That would be four in regulation as opposed to three, which is too many men.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, I thought they were pretty close to the boards, and when it did turn into an actual hockey play, they were sitting down on the bench. So, I mean, for the sake of argument, dumb call. I mean, even blowing that whistle early for the icing, I mean, maybe it did help us out because Vladar was out and Uyghur was a little slow coming back, but I think they're just a little quick on the whistles there and on their
toes. I mean, you call when you get and too many men is usually whistled down as soon as it's happening. It's not one of those possession calls either.
Yeah. Yeah, true.
So I don't know. I guess I don't see that one as the Flames getting jobbed. And again, maybe I haven't seen another angle, but like based on my knowledge of the rule, that was too many men.
It gets iffy every year. I don't know. and further to the point of, I was born a Flames fan, sadly. Well, excitingly, I had no choice in the matter, but I mean, going for a first round pick, I've always thought we took pride in not really getting a first, you know, like Edmonton, how many did they eat? And people want to tank. And I think just putting a good hockey team out there is better than being disappointed. Mm-hmm. Like San Jose, sadly, I mean, Chicago really died after their dynasty fell apart, but it's not exciting to watch, I think, when you're just tanking.
It is. It can be tough on a fan base, no doubt.
Yeah, and having, like, all those extra roster spots, I mean, Rooney, I don't know why they love him so much, to be honest. I feel like Kirkland filled that four center pretty good. And
Rooney plays a ton on the penalty kill, and that is one thing that just continually I feel like gets overlooked, and he does a pretty good job on the penalty kill. Every PK, the first two forwards over the boards are Rooney and Backlund. So, like, I guess I'm not quite as down on Rooney as others are. Look, is he a guy who's going to drive offense on this team? Of course he's not. That's not what his role is. But as a fourth-line player who's really important on your penalty kill, I don't see it the same way when it comes to him not being a guy that should be in the lineup every night. I really think that the work that he does on the penalty kill is important and is the type of thing that should keep you in the lineup.
Yeah, hard work and all that stuff, I mean, definitely should be rewarded. But you're looking at an older center, and where we're trying to get some guys up there that could actually move it, like I said, like we got like 4 second lines. There's no real star power there. And I feel like we got some pretty decent trade chips with Vladar. Like, nothing against him. He's a great goalie. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wish we could keep him, but Cooley's making a real push for his job, I think. And that's a sweet trade chip. And you got a lot of defense that we have in our system and on the roster as well. I mean, with a couple picks and, you know, just filling up that spot. I mean, you still got Berkowitz and Zane in the oven too, and then the whole AHL is full of, I mean, seventh defensemen, I would call them.
I don't know. I mean, like, Brustevich, I think, translates potentially to higher than a seven. I'm not sure what Solovyov is. I'm still not sure what Poirier is, and if the NHL is in his future. Grishnikov, I think, projects to higher than a seven. I think that you could have a really nice second pair of D-man on your hands in Grishnikov, and obviously we know what Parekh is and what he translates to, but he's not, as to your point, is not with the farm team right now.
Yeah, like, that's what I mean, though. Like, it would be nice to already start developing, even if they are on the third line, like, or a third pair, sorry, and then, you know, what if they look really good and they give them a chance to move up with Uyghur or Anderson and they look great, or even trade for Juric, like I think I said that before.
Juracek,
yeah, because he looks like somebody that could fill a hole like Anderson. I mean, Backlund traditionally just murders it on the penalty kill, but with Rooney, I feel like he's playing it more safe and like not really. I mean, it's good to stay back. That's what you want. But
Juracek's a D man. What does that have to do with Rooney?
Oh, no, I just like defense wise, like when it comes to penalty kill and having Backlund there and, you know, just kind of like fill in areas.
Well, yeah, but you're still like
you have that star power on the blue line and more defensive players, so you can let your stars really shine, I guess.
On the penalty kill?
On the team as a whole, I guess, and like just to have like more star power and cash in on a couple chips while we can, and who knows what Rooney could fetch? Because I mean, he's not a horrible player, like you said.
Well, but I mean, right now, and Kyle, I appreciate the call, man. You have yourself a great night. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Right now, I mean, I don't see what the point would be taking Rooney out. I know that people want younger players in, but I mean, that fourth line was again really strong. And here's the problem. Okay, there's kind of like the two schools of thought. The one school of thought is put the best roster on the ice every night, try to win hockey games. The other school of thought is, well, go younger. They shouldn't be winning hockey games and actively try to make your roster less good. The problem is the Flames aren't interested in doing the second option. And so I guess a lot of my pushback comes from being rooted in reality in that here's what the Flames are doing. This is what they're thinking. So I have a lot of my conversations based on what they're doing because I can't really change what they're doing. So based on the path they're on right now and based on what they're trying to accomplish, I don't think taking Rooney out makes a lot of sense. I think he's helping you on your fourth line. That fourth line with him, Kirkland, and Lomberg have been strong. And he's also a really important penalty killer on the team. So I don't know. I'm not as get Rooney out as perhaps some others are. 403-240-4444 is your phone number as we're underway on your Flames Talk postgame show. Let's say hello to George. What's up, George?
Not much, Patty. How are you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm good.
Good. I just wanted to piggyback what you were just talking about right before I got on. There are a lot of fans, and me included, that when the season began, I wanted and expected one thing from this team, right? But thus far, it's gone in another direction. And you look at it as a fan from different perspectives, and one perspective is, you know, oh, this is horrible. We're not going to get elite players, et cetera, et cetera. The other perspective is you watch this team play the way they play this year, you know, very seldom is there any player on this team that's a passenger. It happens now and again, but very seldom. They play hard. Even a game like tonight where, let's be honest, they weren't good through 40 minutes, but they found a way to tie it up again. And onto the Rooney conversation, I've never been a big fan of this player either, but I'll tell you what. You know what? He's turned me in a way that he has been playing. And here's George messing up another quote. So if I do, I'll give you another laugh. But what was the old Hartley quote? Always earned, never given. Did I mess that one up?
That's correct. Always earned, never given. Or never. Yeah, I think that was right. I think always earned, never given.
And let's whether you're a fan of Rooney or not, he's earned his spot in the lineup right now. He really has. And this is coming from a guy who, you know, if he would have been waived at the beginning of the season and set down, well, I would have been fine with it. But the bottom line is, players like that, they play the games, and when they earn their opportunities, I'm the first player to say, you know what, this guy does deserve to be in the lineup right now, and he shouldn't be taken out. And I will freely admit that about Kevin Rooney right now. I think in the role that he's playing, he's doing a great job, and he is one of the most important penalty killers on this team right now.
And I mean, ended up with, where am I right now, played minute 40 shorthanded in this game. When you're in a situation where you're killing off a bunch of penalties in the first period, your PK guys are pretty important. And so, yeah, I the fourth line has been a nice, pleasant surprise for him. And yeah, you can like bring Rory Karens up or bring Jacob Pelche up, but do you want them to be like, if you're so dead set on getting Rooney out of there, which I don't quite understand, but fair enough. Well, would you rather have Karens lighting it up in the American League and really developing down there? Or would you rather him play, you know, because he's not going to get the penalty kill minutes that Rooney does. So would you rather him play like 7 minutes a night? I think it's pretty easy for me. Lomberg played 753 tonight. Kirkland played 756. Do you want Karens being the number one center with the Wranglers, or do you want Pelche to be one of the top wingers on the Wranglers, or do you want them playing fourth line minutes where they're not getting the higher leverage minutes on the penalty kill like Rooney? I don't know. It seems like a pretty easy one for me, but that's just my opinion.
I'm with you 100%. As of right now, I agree. You know, 20, 30, 40 games down the road, let's have that discussion again. But right now, it's not necessary to me. I don't understand it. It's not. And that's not what the Flames are going for, whether you or I or anybody else likes it or not, right? Mm-hmm. So I agree with what you're saying. Let me ask you this, my friend. How much stock do you personally put into the, quote, being a playoff spot, being in a playoff spot on American Thanksgiving means that you'll likely make the playoff stat?
A little. It's less like the arbitrary date of tomorrow, the 28th of November. It's more kind of like U.S. Thanksgiving always falls around the end of the first quarter of the NHL season. And so I look more at, like, to me, it's less about the magical U.S. Thanksgiving date and more just kind of a floating idea of once you're into the second quarter, if you've built up a decent cushion, or on the flip side, if you have allowed a decent deficit to develop, it's tough to chase and erase that, and you have to work really hard in a bad way to give up your cushion. And so I think the number that whatever the number is in terms of the percentage of following it through into the playoffs, to me it's relevant because in a world of 3-point games, and there the Flames go again. They did not play, in my eyes, particularly well tonight, but they still found a way to get a point. In the world of 3-point games, the way that the NHL is so close with so much regular season parity in this league, it is difficult to leapfrog 4 or 5 teams. It's difficult to make up a 5 or 6-point deficit, even when you're talking about, you know, 50 plus into the 60 range of games left remaining. So again, for me, it's less about the actual U.S. Thanksgiving date and the last Thursday of November. It's more about, once you're into the early stages of the second quarter, you're getting into already teams can be protecting playoff spots and the difficulty in teams chasing down playoff spots if they've developed a pretty decent margin. And so from a Flames standpoint, they've built themselves up a decent cushion. They get the single point tonight. They remain second in the division. And they've got, you know, from falling out of this thing, they've got a 4-point cushion. That's not enormous, but it's something that they have a little bit of an edge on, and it's tough to make up ground in this league.
Yeah, I totally understand. From the other side, I'll look at the standings or whatever, and I'll see games played, and I'll say to myself, you know, it's 23 games. We're just past the quarter. Like, it can flip the other way too. But and in saying that, honestly, Patty, like, I'm not trying to be negative at all. I've said it, and I'll say it again. I'm actually very proud. I'm very proud of and very impressed of what this Flame squad has done through the first quarter of the season and a little bit, right? Like, I told you, I didn't anticipate this at all, you know? So, you know, it's good work on them, and they do deserve to be where they are. This is me being realistic more than being negative, and it'll come off as negative. And if people want to chastise me for my next comment, that's fine. But I can't realistically see how right now they can continue winning more than lose with such an anemic scoring punch. Like, that is a concern. And at the same time, I feel bad even criticizing because, I mean, look at the roster, right? Now, in saying that, there should be players that should be putting up more goals. Like, you know, Kuzmenko, obviously. And it's Kuzmenko's what it is at this point. He was, let's call it what it is, more or less a throw-in for the Vancouver trade. And I don't regret one bit taking him on.
Well, he was what made the salary work, so exactly. Vancouver could bring Lindholm in.
Right. So it's not even a critique, and he did finish strong. And on a personal level, I love the guy. Like, he's hilarious and everything. I wish the best for him on a personal level, but it's just not happening with him. So there's, you know, when you got a guy who's supposed to be a prolific goal scorer who has 1 goal in 23 games, you know. And again, I'm not even meant to be a rip, but Jonathan Huberdeau being the leading goal scorer when the guy's an assist guy, which, crazy enough, his assists are, like, at a crazy all-time low. So yeah. What I'm trying to say is, like, we have to come down to reality, and, like, this is what the roster is right now, right? So now, if this continues where they can't get three goals and this goes 25, 30 games, you know, at that point it's like, okay, they're eventually it's going to turn around. I can't foresee them winning, you know, let's say six of the next 10 games, winning 2-1, 2-1, 3-2 every time, you know. Now maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they can pull it out, but to me it's unsustainable.
What I do think is sustainable is Calgary's commitment to defense and the way that they defend as a team. I think that is a sustainable thing. I think their goaltending can be sustainable. I think their belief can be sustainable. Are you going to continue winning at a, you know, there was a stretch there where they were in the 900s. They're above 600. Are they going to win 65% of their games scoring less than as little as they do and, you know, going more extended stretches with not scoring three or more goals? They're at 20 straight games of that right now. Yeah, that probably isn't sustainable, but all it takes is a little bit of an uptick. And whether it's a Nazem Kadri, whether it's a Kuzmenko, whether it's a Sharangovich, whoever it might be, you know, all of a sudden you can start to be a little more prolific offensively. Like, I don't think we're ever talking about this team being a top half scoring team in the league, but they can be a little bit more prolific, and maybe that razor's edge becomes a little less sharp, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Regardless of what happens, like I said, again, probably a game they deserve to lose in regulation tonight, but they found a way, they tied it. They keep fighting, man. They keep fighting for all the deficiencies they have in, you know, certain areas. They keep fighting. I mean, I can't sit here and say that I'm not proud of it and I don't enjoy it, because I do. And, you know, they just got to keep doing what they're doing. And if, you know, they can improve, great. And if they can, it's what it is. That's the way I see it at this point, you mm-hmm. know. Maybe I'll feel differently 40 games from now, but that's where I sit right now on the Flames team.
Well, they play their tails off every single night, and I don't think that's going to change. And, you know, I think there's a reason why they have had the amount of comeback wins they've had. It's because they don't quit. It's because there is a ton of belief, and that can be a powerful thing sometimes. It's not the only thing that is going to lead you to wins, but I think it can be a very powerful thing and can be something that is continually a positive for this group. And honestly, I think that is more and more going to become more and more that is going to become a part of this team's identity, if it's not already entrenched in this team's identity.
100% agree, my friend. Awesome talking to you tonight, buddy. I hope you have a good night, and we'll talk to you soon.
Good stuff, George. Appreciate it, man. 403-240-4444 is your phone number. Following a Flames 2-1 overtime loss in Detroit with Robert up next. What's up, Robert?
Hey, Pat. I just want to say that I thought that first period, as much as they got behind and they got scored on that penalty, which they've had a problem with lately, honestly, I think the defensive play going forward is going to win them, like you said, 60% of their games. They've shown it already through a quarter of the season. I don't see anything that's showing me that it's not going to happen continually through the rest of the season.
Yeah, I do think that the defensive side of their game is something that they can continue being strong at. I do worry about the offense and whether or not that is going to eventually come back to bite them a little bit. But with the goaltending that they have been able to provide themselves, or the goaltending that has been provided to them by Wolf and Vladar, and with the strong defensive play they've had in front of their goaltenders, I think they can remain in a lot of competitive games here. And if at some point the offense does take an uptick or a turn for the better, then it's even more of a, you know, I think, team that can be in a lot of competitive games.
And I really believe in the ability to, like, play a defensive game, a defensive style in this current NHL climate, and still be able to get offense through turnovers, through whatever, which seems to be the Flames' ability right now. Like, they seem to be getting their goals off turnovers and good defensive play, even though they're not a strong offensive team. So, I mean, like, if they continue to do that and play that system, I don't see why they can't be in a playoff spot at the end of the year.
I'm with you. I mean, I think, first of all, they've done enough work to make it so that they are going to be protecting one for a good chunk of this year. And then on top of that, if that defensive acumen and their ability to make that a real central part of their game, then yeah, I think that I do think they've got a decent chance of being a playoff team when it's all said and done. Are they a team that can make a lot of noise once the playoffs begins? I don't know, but I do think that being a top eight team in the Western Conference is not out of the question by any means.
Awesome. Thanks, Pat. I appreciate the call, man.
Okay, be well. Appreciate it, Robert. Let's say hello to Neil on the phone lines tonight. Flames lose 2-1 in overtime in Detroit. Phone lines are open at 403-240-4444, and Neil is with us right now. What's up, buddy?
Good evening, Pat.
Good evening, sir.
Well, that was a hockey game, eh?
They played it, and it counts.
Yeah, and I just wanted to note some of the things I heard from previous callers is like, wow, it's really a Cooley versus Vladdy thing, I think, at this point. Like, people are really into that. And I also thought it was interesting about that Geeky trade. Like, I haven't heard that either, and I was like, wow, I'd take that in a minute.
Well, I haven't heard that, and I'm not, that's Ash, he's one of our regular texters, and I love when Ash texts. I that doesn't sound like a realistic trade at all.
Yeah, but you know, one thing we can actually continue to count on is the goaltending. It's a real strength of the team, and like I said, and people are talking about Cooley versus Vladdy, and I don't know, I'm pretty comfortable with the tandem as it is.
Now, what do you do? What do you do when it comes to the trade deadline or something like that, though?
Yeah, that is true. I mean, that's definitely something to consider. I think you should, like, so I think you were talking about on the show, maybe like more, it's got to be at least, you know, a third round, which is what we paid for him, I believe. Yeah.
I think that is where the Flames would be. That I don't know if they're moving Vladar for anything less than a third round pick, just based on kind of my understanding. And I do too. I do too. And if they can get a second round pick, I think that's a move that they'd really think about making. And I think that if they are, just hold on, let me finish the sentence. If they are at a point at the trade deadline where they would really like to get Cooley up, then I think they would take a third round pick for Vladar if they've decided that they are going to move on from him. But yes, I'm with you. I think they could get a second round pick potentially for him.
Yeah. And, I'm not really going to reiterate any point I've had on Kuzi at this point. Like, and I hope he just finds his game. Honestly, man, like, he seems like a nice guy and must suck not to be producing this level. And, you know, man, I've never been a professional hockey player. It's probably really tough. So just like, go Kuzi, man. Like, hopefully he finds it. Like, at least he tried shooting at the beginning of the game. He must should be just have like some sort of mental block going on. Like I said, it can't be easy.
It is, and I do wonder about the mental block side of things myself, because, you know, with a guy who has that strong a shot and a guy who has been asked as many times by this coaching staff to use his shot more and still not using the shot, like, what did he end up with tonight? Finishes at 2, so he still hasn't had a game all year where he's bought more than. Now, he did have 6 attempts, which is one of his highest all year, but it just, right now, they need a lot more from Kuzmenko than they're getting.
Yeah, so I actually have another question, if that's all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still like the team defense, but, like, I was wondering if, like, I understand that's kind of like their hallmark, and they do have an identity, and people are always like, the Flames don't have an identity, but they truly do now.
This year, they absolutely do.
What if they were to let up just a little bit on that team defense and maybe, like, have some free-range attacks, like maybe some trick play? I don't know. Do you know what I mean? Like, where guys are not fully committed to that defensive game, where a guy's allowed to drop off and, like, you know, create havoc.
I don't, honestly, I don't really, like, I don't think that they don't have enough. they're not a skilled enough group to do that, Neil. Yeah. I just like, and first of all, trick plays aren't really a thing.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
But I just don't know if they don't have the high end talent to be able to even think about doing something like that.
No freelancing for this team.
Exactly.
So I actually do think though that maybe Tyson Berry should slot in.
I could see that he would be the next man up just in terms of their rotation. I haven't minded Hanley at all, but
no.
The only thing that hurts Berry right now is that the power play is rolling, and if he's not getting power play time, is he helping you a lot five on five? And does he help you more than Hanley or Bean does at five on five? That's the only thing that would hurt Berry right now.
But like he's playing his opposite side when he comes in too, though. So maybe that is something that's like a benefit, possibly a little bit.
I haven't seen much of that being a benefit at five on five. He hasn't been horrible, I haven't seen that being a big benefit either.
Okay, and also I just want to say one thing. Also, maybe just like Lamborghini up a elevation, maybe onto the third liner, like the second line in place of Kuzi, or whatever line he's playing on.
I mean, there's...
Or Pospisil, maybe.
I mean, Pospisil is already in the top six right now. I thought Pospisil played really well tonight.
On the fourth, you know?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, with the offensive woes, could we see some new lines at practice or some new lines come Friday's game? Yeah, we could. We'll see. We'll see what they do.
If I see him elevated, right? If I see Lomberg elevated, I see him bringing energy to whatever line he's on.
Well, there's no doubt about that.
On a road game.
He'll always bring energy to whatever line he's on, for sure.
Exactly.
All right, buddy.
Have a great night, Pat.
Good to hear from you, Neil. Phone lines are open at 403-240-4444. If you want to chat on this Wednesday night, Flames fall by a 2-1 score in overtime against the Red Wings this evening with Anand up next. What's up, buddy?
Good evening, buddy. How are you?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Thank you. Yeah, another difficult game, especially that last tough call. I think everybody has been talking about it, about the too many men on ice. What did you think of that call?
It looked like too many men on the ice to me.
All right, gotcha.
Now, again, yeah, I've only seen the one angle. I know there are a lot of people that didn't like it, but based on my knowledge of the rule, there were too many men on the ice. That's it wasn't chintzy. It didn't look like that to me. It looked like they had too many men on the ice and they got called for it.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, I have seen also different what you call thoughts and opinions on the call as well. So I just wanted to ask you. My second question for you, what do you think, like, this is more like more frustrating? I know they took quite a few penalties, like at the beginning of the game, they took like three penalties back-to-back. Why do you think is it again because of fatigue or tiredness, or they're playing with more aggression, or do they have some kind of frustration compared to this rotary, compared to the past one we had?
Well, I thought the Coronado penalty was unfortunate for him. But he kind of got beat one on one, and right near the boards, and got his stick on another stick, and tripped his man. That was a pretty clear call. Then the Red Wings score on that power play up until Coronado's penalty. So I don't think it was laziness. I just think he got beat and he took a penalty. It happens. But up until that point, the Flames had all the momentum. Like they were running the show up until that point. Then Coronado takes the penalty. Then Detroit swings momentum with the goal. And then right after that, the Flames got out of sorts. And then Huberdeau took the one penalty was awful. I don't know what Huberdeau was arguing about on the second penalty when he slashed the stick out of the guy's hands when he didn't have the puck. Yeah. That's an interference call all day, every day. The other interference call, the one angle I saw looked a little incidental on Huberdeau, but maybe it wasn't. But, you know, Huberdeau takes two penalties, and now you're 5-on-4 for one of them got negated when Larkin took a penalty. The other one, the Red Wings got the full 2 minutes on. But it just throws everything out of rhythm and, you know, keeps your skilled guys off the ice, all that type of stuff. So that's kind of what I saw on the penalties. Huberdeau's were frustrating. Coronado's was unfortunate. But in the end, the Red Wings score the power play goal. And then the too many men on the ice call looked like a too many men on the ice call to me.
Gotcha. Yeah, fair enough. Good explanation. Another question for you. The previous caller, Neil, was talking about it, but if you were to, let's say, instead of elevating Lomberg, keep Lomberg on the forward line, do you think elevating Kirkland up there and then maybe putting a Klapka instead of maybe Kuzmenko just for like a game or so, do you think that would work?
Could. I mean, it's not ideal. I don't know if there's an ideal guy to elevate right now. When Pospisil was playing fourth line, he was the obvious guy. But right now, I don't know if there's an obvious guy of those three, Kirkland, Lomberg, and Rooney, to elevate. Because I think they're perfectly or well slotted where they are. Of the three, Kirkland would probably be the guy because he has shown the ability to play the wing. So if you wanted to sit out a guy like Kuzmenko, you could elevate Kirkland, bring Klapka in. That would probably be the best option, but I don't know if there's like a natural fit to elevate in that regard.
Do you think maybe if, let's say, if you don't play Klapka either, do you think keeping Kuzmenko but putting him to the fourth line? But because I think one time putting on the fourth line made a bit of confidence booster for Kuzmenko.
I don't think he that makes a lot of impact on a fourth line. The way that fourth line is playing, I would much rather keep it together than throw it out of whack by putting Kuzmenko there. I think he would really mess with some of the chemistry they've built there.
Gotcha, fair enough. All right. And final question for you. Do you think we'll go with Dustin Wolf or Dan Vladar on Friday?
My guess is they go Wolf.
Wolf. All right, sounds good. All right, thank you so much, Pat. I appreciate it. Have a good night and talk to you on which will be a very emotional day on Friday.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Anand. Appreciate it. As always, the phone lines are open. Got a couple of lines open on this Wednesday night. 403-240-4444. Flames fall 2-1 in overtime to the Detroit Red Wings. If you want to call now, 403-240-4444. Keep rolling your texts in as well at 960-960. Let's go back inside the Flames locker room. Following this 2-1 overtime loss, let's hear from the captain, Michael Backlund, postgame in Detroit.
What did this game feel like in terms of, you know, the flow of it? Obviously got the penalties early, but then just how it kind of settled in after that.
Yeah, I don't think it was our best game. I didn't think we got until the third, really, some pressure. We can play better than we did tonight. But it was a tight game until the end. We got a big point. To get a point when you don't play well, it's big, but we got a lost a little too many here on the road. Now it's time to win our road game.
Obviously, to get a couple of power play looks, what did you see in terms of just what you were able to generate and eventually find that time?
Yeah, there were some looks there, and big goal by Czar. A big time. So, it was a really nice goal, and it was building up. I thought we had some momentum on the power play, and had a really nice shot. So, that was a big goal.
Dan played really well tonight to keep you guys in it over that first 40 minutes. What were your thoughts on his play?
Vladdy played really well. He was solid tonight. Made some big saves. And even in early in the third, he made some big saves to keep us in. So, he had a really good night tonight.
What are you seeing from Czari these days? It seems like he's really, really sometimes dominating.
Yeah, I know. He's been really good for us. He looks really comfortable in the middle, too. I feel like he's finding his way there. Tried him a few times last year, but looked like he was more comfortable on the wing last year. But this year, he's really been really solid starting on the wing, but now on center too. So he's been playing really well for us and making some really good plays out there. And he wants a puck, and it's great to see.
What did you see on the too many men call?
I just sat down. Guys were standing up, so I didn't really see. I just got off the ice a few seconds before. Mm-hmm. I didn't see the play.
Was it just like that? You mentioned tight. I mean, it seemed tight both ways. Like it was something that they were doing, or is it just the way that game kind of turned into it?
It was a tight game, but I think we have another level in us and to play a little faster. And again, unfortunately, it was a little better today than the last game, but it can be even better. We can be more connected and create more. Like in the third, we had more chances because we're better on the forecheck and get it back to that. The first period next game. I thought we started first five was good until those penalties. Then the game got a little away from us.
There you go. That is Captain Michael Backlund post game following this 2-1 overtime loss in Detroit. It is Flames Talk postgame. We're underway on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Call now, 403-240-4444. Last call for phone calls. If you want to chime in, do so now. Keep your texts coming as well at 960-960. More of your phone calls, more of your texts. One more look inside the Flames locker room and a whole lot more as we continue along. Flames Talk postgame live right here on Calgary Flames Hockey. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
The Flames Talk postgame show continues on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
All right, it is last call for phone calls. If you want to jump in, now is the time to do so. Few lines open, 403-240-4444. Keep your text coming at 960-960. Flames Talk postgame rolls on. Steinberg along with you on this Wednesday night. 2-1 overtime loss. Flames on the road in Detroit as they continue this four-game road trip Friday in Columbus. That's Friday afternoon against the Columbus Blue Jackets. One more look inside the Flames locker room, then back to your texts and phone calls. Let's hear from Connor Zary, Calgary's only goal scorer tonight.
I mean, obviously, you get the point. Disappointing to kind of scratch and claw in the third period and not come over that second.
Yeah, obviously a tough way to end the game. You never want to lose in overtime or go on the kill in overtime and lose it that way. So that always sucks. Obviously, the bright spot is getting 1 point, but I think all of us in this room want to win games, and whether that's in overtime, whether that's in the first 60, I think we got to pride ourselves on doing that. I thought for most of the game we were good, and we came out hard and we let up a little bit, and then it was kind of back and forth all game. I think we took it to them in the third period for sure, and that's something just for us to clean up moving forward. We don't want to lose games against anyone, so just back to work, have a good Thanksgiving and regroup.
What did you see on the too many men call? You certainly didn't agree with it.
Yeah, it's a tough one, but at the end of the day, you're not gonna argue that a call is a call, and they decided to call that, and we live with it. And like I said, we kind of just got to regroup and look forward to the next game. It just hate to lose.
Just one of those nights where it seemed like it was difficult throughout the night to generate anything offensively. Like, was it something there more, or is it just the way that these two teams were kind of set up to make it tight checking?
Yeah, I think we played our structure, they played their structure. They got a early one on the power play, and we were able to capitalize on the power play late in the game. So it was just kind of one of those nights where it was back and forth, and I thought in the third period we really took it to them. We got our chances. But at the end of the day, we lost the game, so it's not quite enough.
Do you feel like you know, we talked about this the other day, too, about how you were kind of due. When that goal goes in, is this another relief for you every time they do finally find the net?
Yeah, I think anytime you score, it feels good, and especially in those situations late in the game to tie it up, that feels good. I think for me, it's just keep doing the right things, keep playing how I'm playing, and keep plugging away that way, and they'll fall. And I just got to keep creating chances and moving my feet, and that's the way my game has to be all the time, and be consistent that way, and keep finding the back of the net and really bearing down on those chances.
And you're feeling as comfortable as you've ever felt, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I feel great out there. I want to be out there. I want to be the guy. I want to try and have the puck on my stick and distribute and skate through the middle and do those things. And obviously, when I have my game on, I think I'm a great player, and I think it's something you have to do day in, day out.
There you go. That's Connor Zary postgame in Detroit this evening. Let's get back to the text line now at 960-960. Lots to get to here. This reads, the too many men is unfortunately the right call at a terrible time of the game. It happened to Bouchard last season, and he scored on the Kings. Barry was off the ice, but it gave Bouchard time to get in the right spot to shoot. Flames D-man had time to get into a spot, gap up, and potentially prevent an odd man rush. And I think that's a big reason why they blew it dead, because the Red Wings had started to turn it back up the ice, and the too many men could have helped the Flames and could have given them an advantage, which also plays into it. This says that was too many men. He was more like 25 feet away when the sub jumped on, and it ruined a breakaway or 2-on-1 for Detroit. Again, that is a really good point and an important reason why I think that this was that it was called. This says, I agree, it was too many men. Miramanov coasted in from about 35 feet. Good call, in my opinion, as it allowed them to get back defensively, jumping the change. That comes from Rob. And again, that also, when it comes to a sometimes discretionary call like that, if it creates an advantage, then a lot of times they will call it. If it's close and it doesn't create an advantage, a lot of times they'll let it go. And this one did create a defensive advantage for the Flames, which is why, again, it to me looked like it was too many men. This says, I would have liked them. This is obviously coming back to the reaction when we were talking about it before. Would have liked to see them move their feet more. If the second player showed more hustle on the change, there may not have been a penalty called on it. This from Spencer in Saskatoon, his first time texting in. Welcome to the show, Spencer. Flames were really lucky to get a point out of the game tonight. I think the refs took way too much control of this game. Wasn't a big fan of the first two calls. They seemed pretty soft. And then after that flurry of penalties, they kind of put their whistles away. I just love a bit more consistency, you know. But that aside, I think their power play was not great until the last one. Only noticeable skater was Zeri, and Vladdy definitely kept them in this one tonight. Don't love two games in a row like this. Hopefully they can get 5 points on this trip. They have to play much better the next two games. This comes from Xavier, who says, it is clear. Sorry, just that jumped on me. It is very clear to me the Flames are playing subpar to their abilities. I talk about players who should be leading the team. They're non-existent. To have their top scoring duo be defensemen seems a little unbalanced. If they claim, this one's tough because it's clearly voice to text, and I'm having a tough time with this one. And Xavier, no offense to you, I'm just going to skip it because I'm going to really struggle through some of the voice to text on that one, and that just makes for bad radio. This from Nelson in Calgary. When is management going to either trade or release Kuzmenko? Hard to think anyone would want him, and he should clear waivers for a warm body. All he's doing is taking up a roster spot. I think the first step before assigning, or I don't think there's a lot of tradability right now. I think the first step is scratching him for a game and seeing what that does. This says that was a legitimate too many men. Kadri was lazy going off the ice. This says, little frustrated with the calls to sell Vlar. He's playing the best hockey of his career this season, has a winning career record, and has the team's confidence when he's in net. If we trade a goalie, an unproven, talented goalie like Cooley, I'd be more comfortable with that. Thanks. Happy they got the point at least tonight. That is another option they could go down. I just think at this point, Vladar would have more tradability and more cachet, mainly because he's got the NHL experience. Cooley's NHL resume is still rather limited. This from Dwayne in Midnapore. I think the Flames need to stay the course as in the beginning of the year with rebuilding. If they can get something great for Vladar or Cooley, make it happen. Early success is great, but don't get distracted from a long-term goal. Get some reps in for the young guys. I don't think they will get distracted from the long-term goal. I really don't. I think that Craig Conroy's got his eye on the big picture, and that doesn't mean that he wants the team to tank this year, but it does mean that I don't think he's going to change course. He put this team together. I don't think all of a sudden he's going to be buying at the deadline or anything like that. This comes from Robin Warman, who says, sounds like they should have flipped Kuzi in the offseason. Good luck in the KHL. This reads, I am enjoying the effort from the Flames this year a lot better than past years. What else we got here at 960-960? Our boy Mandeep, BK Beaufort, says, Vladar was the MVP tonight. Kuzmenko needs to wake up if they want to do any damage this year. Worst call I've seen in years, but fitting against the Flames. Top players got to just shoot more and play a simple game. Their goalies are saving us this year, bottom line. Let's put on a show Friday night for 13. Go Flames, go. That comes from our boy Mandeep. I definitely don't think it was the worst call in years, Mandy. At worst, it would have been a borderline call. But I don't think that, I don't think it was a too many men call. I don't think it was a bad too many men call. It seemed like too many men on the ice. This from, I don't know who this is from, but it says, I agree 1,000% on the caller about Huberdeau. He's a liability, bewildered why the coach continues to put him in key situations. This says, following up, longtime listener, second time caller. Sorry that the Flames peaked in your first year covering the team, Patty. You didn't deserve that. Also, good on you. I didn't even know I got a shout out on 32 Thoughts a few weeks ago. I did not know I got that. Thank you. That comes from a texter on the text line tonight. What else we got here? This comes from Mick, who says, trade Rooney and a third for Peyton Krebs. Maybe that gets it done. We just saw Tomasino traded for a fourth. That might get it done. This says, I'm perplexed as to why fans don't understand that they desperately need guys who can play center. At the end of the day, that fourth line is doing their job better than a lot of guys who get far more ice time. That comes from Heather in reference to Kevin Rooney, who was getting a rough ride from, I think, our first caller, Kyle, tonight. This is from Spencer in Calgary, who says, Mike Russo out of Minnesota said last week that he personally thinks the Wild will move on from Marco Rossi after the year. Curious what you think a realistic trade for him could look like in the summer. Thoughts on Hanzek and a first, or someone like Sharon Govich and a pick. Of all the players being talked about in the rumor mill, he's truly the player that would fit the Flames' need for a young center, a guy I would love to see as a Flame. Now, I hadn't seen that report from Mike Russo, who covers the Wild for The Athletic. Now, he's as dialed in on that market. In fact, there's nobody close to him when it comes to dialed in on the Wild. So if he says that, I believe it to be true 100%. Yes, I would give up lots for Rossi. I think there is a really good player there. If the belief is that the Wild are giving up, or not giving up, but moving away from Marco Rossi, he'd be the perfect type of player the Flames could go after. A former first round pick. He's having a good year, 17 points in 22 games. He's still young. So I think that would be the perfect guy. Do I think Marco Rossi's a number one center long term? No. But I think he's a really good center. I really do. He's what, 23 years old, will be 24 to start next year. Yeah, I could see a lot of scenarios where a Marco Rossi trade could make sense. That comes from Spencer. This is from Trent, who says, Pat, the PK is seventh worst in the league. I'm not ready to beat the Rooney drum. He just doesn't generate enough offense. You should never have Lomberg and Rooney in the lineup and expect to win offense. Play one or the other, but not both in the same game. They'd be better off to put Klapka on Costco's right. This says, Pat, with the waiver rule, would it be worthwhile to give Pelche a shot sometime here? He's already gone through waivers once and doesn't need to go through them again until he reaches the games and days required. This team could maybe use his energy and emotion right now. Don't hate it. And of the guys we talked about earlier, I think it was with George on the phone lines, of the guys that you could bring up to put into a fourth line role, if they wanted to go Pelche for a little bit in that regard, wouldn't hate it. I would like it a whole lot more than Karens, that's for sure. I just think Karens is a guy that keep letting him cook in the American League. Don't need him to be in a fourth line role at the NHL level as it stands right now. Let him keep on. Like, he's having the most success he's ever had in the AHL, and he's doing it consistently. Let that continue to build. If they wanted to do that with Pelche, especially because there's a potential you could elevate him up the lineup depending on the way things go, I would hate that a whole lot less. This from Raj, who says, tough game tonight, hard to watch, just no goal scoring touch. Do you think Huska is sending the right message by rewarding Huberdeau more ice time than Zeri after his two stupid penalties? Zeri looks like the real thing. They need to keep him away from Huberdeau. Well, he'll learn a lot more from Backlund. The problem is Zeri's playing center, and so I don't think you can put, you're not going to have Backlund on the wing, and I don't think right now Zeri's their best bet at center. Zero questions asked. Zeri's the guy. So in that respect, I'd have no problem keeping him with Huberdeau. Huberdeau playing 18-14 in this game was about a minute more than what Zeri played. And that mainly, I think, just because of power play time. Yeah, it was the discrepancy there was on the power play because they play on the same 5-on-5 line. I didn't love Huberdeau at all tonight. I really hated the second penalty. The first one seemed a little bit more incidental, but the second one was silly. No, he did provide a really good screen on the game-tying goal, so there's that on the other side. Look, Huberdeau, I don't know what more you want me to say at this point about a guy who looks like his point total might be less this year than it was last year. Do the quick math on what he's on pace for, but the Huberdeau story doesn't look like this year it's going to drastically turn around, that's for sure. He is currently on an ADT. Just want to make sure. It was really low. Want to make sure that my numbers are correct before I say I'm on the air. But he's on pace for about 44 or 45 points right now. I knew it was below last year's pace. I didn't know it was that below that last year's pace. Now, part of that is a product of, as a team, they don't score a ton. But, I mean, the Huberdeau story at this point is what it is. Will he ever be a $10.5 million player on the ice? I mean, we're into year 3 of 8 as a member of the Flames. I don't, and you only get older. There's your Sherlock moment of the year. I don't know. And it started off really nicely for him. And again, has regressed pretty frustratingly to what we're seeing right now. This says Kadri needs to go back to playing the way he knows how to play. We don't need Colorado Nas. We need Toronto Nas. Playing against the opposition's best night in, night out, in your face, not worrying about points, but just making life a living hell for the opposition. Make players hate coming to the dome because they know it's going to be a war every shift against him. If he does that, guarantee the points will follow. Does anyone think McDavid had fun being matched up against Nas when he was on the Leafs? Play to your strengths and do what has made you a successful NHLer. If he does that, I couldn't care less if he tops out at 50 points. Well, in fairness, Colorado Nas was pretty good too, friend. And Colorado Nas made McDavid's life a living hell in a Western Conference final when the Avalanche swept him four games straight. So I thought Kadri had a hell of a night too. I thought he was one of their best players. I think with they could get more of last season's Kadri, they'd be happy. I don't think he's been bad this year, but I think he does have another level to get to. This from Jeremy and McKenzie. What do you think the Flames need to do to stop taking so many penalties? Is that 3 out of 4 games now this season that it's cost them? 3 to 4 games, rather, this season that's cost them. Actually, I think generally they've been pretty disciplined in that regard. Even tonight, they weren't awful. Like Monday, it was terrible with 9. But tonight, I didn't think they were awful. Just one of them was really poorly timed. Great stuff on the text line tonight at 960-960. Really appreciate it as always. As we got a few more phone calls to get to now on this Wednesday night. Flames fall 2-1 in a, not in a shootout, 2-1 in overtime to the Detroit Red Wings tonight as we continue along on your Flames Talk postgame. Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. A couple more phone calls. It's Steinberg along with you on this Wednesday night. Pepper is up next. What's going on, Pepper?
Hi, thank you for taking my call, Pat.
Of course.
I always enjoy your show. I'm a first-time caller.
Well, welcome aboard.
And I really like your show. And I have to concur with most of your fans are knowledgeable. And it, for me, I don't have any reason to think that this team is going to all of a sudden drop off. Like, I really think that the Calgary Flames have got a shot to make a statement in the playoffs this year. I really believe that. I don't have any reason to think otherwise. Hence, it disappoints me when I hear all this talk of, you know, messing around with the notion of maybe to trade Dan Vladar away, et cetera, for future consider, you know, for to strengthen the team for future years. Like I like the here and the now, and I think the Calgary Flames have got a viable shot at this, and so, and I have a really unusual idea.
Okay.
You're a knowledgeable person, and so I'd like to run my idea by you and get your opinion. Years ago, when I was a child, I'm an old guy. It was always this is heartfelt, like fond memory.
Mm-hmm.
In the tournament, you go down the road, you get the tournament, and you didn't get to the final, but lo and behold, you got to the consolation final, and maybe you won the consolation final. Therefore, all the teams are shooting for the Stanley Cup, and of course, that's what we all want. But the teams that don't make the playoffs could play in the playoffs anyways. And then if you win the consolation playoffs, the best team in the consolation pick gets the first round instead of all this nonsense of tanking and tanking and tanking. I despise the word, actually. But anyway, I don't know what you think of that idea. But
I mean, I actually I think
NHL could look at something like that.
I don't think it'll ever happen. But I get what you're saying. And it's been brought up before. And it's something that I have heard before. I think even Elliot Friedman's talked about it before. Do I think it'll ever happen? Very, 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 very unlikely. But yeah, I mean, and look, tanking does the good thing about the conversation is that tanking is by no means a guarantee. And I mean, if you get that generational player, which they call him generational for a reason. If you get that player, great. And usually if you get that player, even if it takes a little bit of time, eventually you figure it out. Colorado eventually, it took a little while, but eventually figured it out with McKinnon, and they won a Stanley Cup. Crosby didn't take very long. They were really bad for 1 year. Then I think they were in the playoffs year two, and they won. They went to a cup final year three and won in year four. So it happened pretty quickly for Crosby. McDavid took a little bit longer. They haven't won a cup yet, but they've been to two out of three Western Conference finals and game seven of last year's cup final, and McDavid and the Oilers have figured it out to an extent. And so it takes different or differing when you get that guy, it feels like it takes a differing or a varying amount of time to get to truly figuring it out. But you got to get that guy. Yeah. Because, you know, yeah. Taylor Hall wasn't that guy. That was a first overall pick. And, you know, some of the other Rasmus Dahlin may not be that guy. And Buffalo hasn't gotten to that point yet, so on and so forth. So it takes a Jack Eichel at number two, who would have gone number one in most other years. Nico Hischier. There's lots of examples of when it doesn't work, even if you get that high pick, right?
Yeah, I think it's fair that you and I and all of us, we're all having fun watching this team this year, are we not? I mean, I think that they're remarkably better than I thought they would be. I got to be honest, I didn't think they'd be.
Well, yeah, I'm with you on that.
And so then that makes it fun for me. And even if they weren't as good as they are, if I can use that word, they're good because they are. They're good. And even if they weren't, it's still fun, but this is really fun. I mean, the way they've been rolling, yes, the last couple nights haven't been what we wanted, but that's going to happen in a season anyways. Mm-hmm. At any rate, Pat, I really appreciate your show, and I thank you for taking my call, and I'll let you go to somebody else that wants to get a few words in. Thank you so much.
Call back anytime, hey?
Thank you so much. I will. I intend to. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Go Flames, go.
Be well. Thank you, man. Let's say hello to Dale on the phone lines. What's up, Dale?
Hey, Pat. How are you?
I'm okay, man. How are you?
Good. It's been a while.
It has been. How are we doing?
Yeah. All right. You know which side I'm on. I've texted in enough times.
In terms of the future direction?
Oh, in terms of them making the playoffs.
Oh, yes.
Or
okay.
Even worse, which I think is going to happen. Because I don't think they have the talent to make it into the playoffs, is that we're going to see them finish anywhere from 11th worst to 16th worst overall. And which means that we watch Montreal walk up to the podium at 11th overall because we didn't get the bottom 10. And then we draft somewhere between 28 and 32, which I'm guessing where Florida is going to be. And it's like, what have we accomplished?
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing, I'm. It's not my vocation. I don't sit there and do analytics and everything. But Pavel Datsyuk, in his era, was one of the best two-way centers in the National Hockey League.
Mm-hmm.
He was drafted sixth overall.
Pavel Datsyuk was you mean sixth round?
Or sixth round?
Yeah. Sorry. No, I wanted to make sure that we were on the same page. Okay. Yeah.
That's fine. Yeah, thanks for correcting me. Gary Suter, who I think was a better in his own end than Al MacInnis and still got 70, 80 points a year, was drafted, I think he was the seventh or eighth round draft pick. So it does happen.
Mm-hmm.
It does happen. But for me, I'm sitting back watching a team that probably shouldn't be sitting where it is in the standings and probably won't because they've just played two teams that are a middling team that may or may not get in the playoffs and, to me, got outplayed. The only difference was their goaltending and sitting this for me, what is, all these people that sit back and go, well, let's make the playoffs. Wouldn't it be great to make the playoffs? At what end?
I do understand the question and I even understand the dilemma. And I think there's a lot of Flames fans to that point, Dale. I do think there's a lot of Flames fans right now who are conflicted, who are enjoying watching the team do something that maybe they weren't expecting, but also, to your point, understanding that, okay, to what end indeed. I can try to play devil's advocate on the to what end question if that's okay. Something you're interested in.
Yeah, sure.
Because I do think part of the... part of it is that you could make the argument that this group, This group making it with some young players can be a real important thing for some of those young players and in building a culture and stuff like that. That would be the one area that I would point to and say, okay, it could be a big part of building a winning culture, so on and so forth.
Okay, but let me give you this from my end. Okay, let's say they squeak in because on our side, on the Western side, okay, we do expect Edmonton. They've got two players that are going to get them above Calgary. Mm-hmm. It's going to happen. We know that. Or more likely, let's not just say it's going to happen, more likely. We also see that Vancouver's probably going to be there, and we see that what is it, Vegas?
Vegas is pretty like a pretty good chance they're going to be there. I think Edmonton will eventually, if we
can beat out LA, we might get into fourth. We might get in that last, because I look at the other side, I look at Colorado, they're coming on. We know that Dallas is going to be there. We know that Winnipeg's going to be there. Chances are they're in a wild card spot. So what advantage does it for Calgary when they get in the last wild card spot and they play one of the top four teams to get blown out in three games? And before somebody calls in after me and says, Dale, it's going to take four wins for Calgary. No, there's no matter how bad the underdog is, if they lose the two first games, the third game, if they get beat, it's a series over. So don't call in after me and say it takes four games. Calgary's probably going to be out in third. What do you learn? What do you learn getting your arse kicked in three games? Nothing. So to me, it's even worse getting into the playoffs. Like, you look at this team, Pat, there's Connor Zeri, there's Ball, and there's Sharon Govich. They're going to be carrying this team forward. Because really, we know that Anderson's gone at a certain point in time. This team's not going to be a Stanley Cup contender before Anderson asked to move on. Before probably...
You think he's going to ask to move on?
Oh, I do. Anderson's going to... listen, if they make it in this year, maybe... But I'm guessing, the way I'm predicting it's going to go, by the time we get to the trade deadline, there's going to be no hope in hell. I just think teams are going to start ramping it up. Calgary's playing like teams play game 50, game 60, game 70. They're putting in an effort that most teams that know they're going to be there start ramping it up. We've already witnessed it against Detroit. We've already witnessed it against, and it was a desperate team in Ottawa. But they don't have the talent to push it forward. And if teams start playing as hard as Calgary does, and I reward them for the effort they're putting in, but you can't do that for 82 games. Most teams that are very talented start ramping it up the way Calgary's playing at game 50, 60, 70 to get into the playoffs. And then they ramp it up even more when they get in the playoffs. So Calgary's not going to be there. They're just not. So, I don't know what the benefit is. I have no idea what the benefit is.
So what would you
get in the playoffs?
What would you like them to do then? Let's say
here's my point. I watched last year. I watched Marimanov. I watched Bacall. Neither one of them were NHL players. This year, I'm like, okay, I like the step up.
Mm-hmm.
But the on any team, the bottom three defensemen or the players that rotate in and out are at best a sixth on most teams in the NHL, more likely a seventh. And let's look at it. Let's look at Las Vegas. Weegar and Anderson are fourth defensemen on Vegas. You're not putting them above Hanifin. You're not putting them above Petrangelo, and you're not putting them above Theodore. On any team, good team in the NHL, those are third or fourth defensemen.
They'd be good third or fourth defensemen on those.
They would be. But these are our first and second defensemen. This is not a talented team. So the best thing that this team can hope for is to keep dropping in the standings. Because the last thing you want to see is Montreal stepping up at 11th, picking. And I'm not saying, listen, Calgary steps up to 28th, 29th, got forward traffic, could still be a better NHL player and could establish themselves in the NHL better than Montreal stepping up at 11th. But in this world, I like playing the odds. And the odds are the 11th overall pick is much better than the 20th.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. The actual
person that watched in the 80s, and there was, I understand there were steps back, but there was two steps forward, one step back in the 80s. I have not, you know what? I'm going to give you, what's the guy that always calls in? I would guarantee you that most of the guys that call into the show, which most people would think are very intelligent people, but they love hockey. I guarantee you,
I would have
probably run the franchise, probably could have run the franchise better than the general managers that have been in place since Fletcher left. And I'm not putting him as a genius. This organization has been ran pathetically since 1989.
So, and Dale, I'm gonna just say, and I not because we're going down this road, just because we're at 8 minutes now. I'm gonna say, like, I appreciate the call as always, and we'll talk soon. And then I'll just respond to it, and then wrap the show. I appreciate it as always, Dale. Look, I think what Dale is representing, and I think it was important to let him go for a little bit there, because I think what he is representing is a certain portion of Flames fans, because I see it on the text line all the time. And you know, there's a couple, Dale's one of the guys on the text line. Our buddy Mick is one of those guys on the text line. There's 7-8 others just that I can off the top of my head think of who are kind of in a similar mindset, saying, regardless of whether this is fun or not, there is a feeling of, well, what's the point of all this if they're only going to end up going out in round one or just missing the playoffs, give up that pick, and Montreal gets the higher pick, so on and so forth. And I get all of that. I do understand the dilemma. I guess my rebuttal to that would be, even if it means playing devil's advocate, first of all, the Flames have been very transparent. Craig Conroy has been very transparent in terms of how he is going to undertake this plan. And he's been very transparent in saying that we're not tearing it down. Whether Dale or others want them to, they're not going to tear it down. I think we've got a pretty good idea that that is not something that the majority owner, the principal owner of this team, Murray Edwards, is interested in doing. So they're going to try to go in a different direction, get younger, undertake a 3 to 5 year plan, and hopefully be a closer to contending team or contending team in 3 to 5 years. In my eyes, this is year one of that plan. So in saying all that, they've been very transparent that they're not tearing it down. They're in still the infancy of getting to this point. There's not really a whole lot else you can do at this point other than let the guys play. Like, Ryan Huska's job is still to put the same way that Quinn's job in San Jose, or now I'm forgetting who's the head coach, Richardson's job in Chicago. Those teams are also going through a stretch where they're rebuilding. Still the coach's job to put the best team on the ice. And so that's what Ryan Huska's doing. And then you kind of let it go from there. They're getting high-end goaltending from both their guys. They are winning games because they work hard. You're not going to ever hear an NHL player say that they don't want to win and they're going to be okay with losing. Once you've got a plan that has been transparently laid out, you kind of have to let it play itself out. And I think that's what we're seeing right now. And I don't think they're going to alter course if this year continues to exceed some expectations. I don't think they're going to abandon the big picture just for right now. I still think they're going to carry out their 3 to 5 year plan. And here's the last thing that I'll say that I forgot to mention while I was going devil's advocate with Dale a little earlier. If they make the playoffs, I do think, or even if they're in a playoff hunt for a good chunk of the season, I do think that that is a good development tool for some of your young players like Wolf, like Zeri, like Pospisil, like Ball, guys like that, Coronado, good development tool for them to learn. And here's the second part. The way this season has gone so far, the guys who have been the principal reasons to why they've had some unexpected success and why they're five games above 500, it's because those young players are leading the way. Is it a little easier to be okay with unexpected success if it's Dustin Wolf, who's maybe your franchise goaltender, at the forefront? If it's Connor Zeri, if it's Matt Coronado, I put Kevin Ball, who's 24 years of old age, in that mix as well. Are you a little bit more okay with it if it's players like that who are going to be a part of this for a long time, who are kind of principal reasons? If you mix that with them not abandoning their big picture plan and this being a good development tool for their younger players, does that help you be okay with it if you're in the be bad crowd, if you're in the tank crowd, so on and so forth? That would be how I would present devil's advocate for you. For me, my opinion has been and will continue to be, Craig Conroy's laid out his plan. He's been honest. They're not going to tank. He's got his big picture. He's going to stick to the big picture. Let the guy cook. It's really only year one of a 3 to 5 year plan. That's where I've been the entire time. Great stuff on the phone lines tonight. Great stuff on the text line at 960-960. Really appreciate the calls and the texts as per usual. As we start to move towards the end of our Flames Talk postgame show on this Wednesday night, time for our final summary, as we had zero even strength goals in this game. 0 5-on-5 goals, 0 3-on-3 goals, 0 4-on-4 goals. It was all special teams that got the job done so far or in this game tonight. Red Wings opened the scoring at the 6:33 mark of the first period on an Alex DeBrincat power play goal. DeBrincat gets his ninth of the year to make it 1-0. Michael Rasmussen and Lucas Raymond draw the assists, and it was 1-0 Detroit at that point, 1-0 after 20 minutes of play. No scoring in the second period, no scoring for a good chunk of the third period, and the Flames finally tie it with less than 3 minutes to go in the third period. A power play goal from the aforementioned Connor Zeri. He rips home his fifth of the year. Zeri from Mackenzie Weegar and Yegor Sharangovich at 17-12. Power play goal sends this game to overtime. In overtime, it is another power play goal that wins it on a too many men on the ice penalty. Red Wings win it on Lucas Raymond's OT winner. His sixth of the year comes at 3:35 of the extra frame. Power play goal assisted by DeBrincat and Mo Sider to get us to our 2-1 final score. Final shots were 27-25 in favor of Detroit. Flames 1-for-4 on the power play tonight. Red Wings 2-for-4 with the man advantage. Your three stars tonight in Detroit: number 3, Connor Zeri; number 2, Alex DeBrincat; and the number 1 star with a goal and an assist, and the overtime winner, Lucas Raymond. Hardest working Flame, as selected by Megan Mickelson tonight, was Connor Zeri. With the overtime loss, Flames fall to 12-7-4 on the season. They're back in action Friday on the road in Columbus, while Detroit improves to 10-10-2. They're back in action Friday at home to New Jersey. That is your final summary. And now for everyone involved in Flames hockey tonight, for our broadcast crew of Derek Wills and Megan Mickelson, and for our outstanding producer, Connor Gronsdahl, my name is Pat Steinberg. That'll start to wrap us up on our Flames Talk postgame show, available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Next up for the Flames is, note the start time, Black Friday in the U.S., Friday afternoon in Columbus. It is a 1 o'clock face-off, which means we're on the air at noon with your Calgary Flames warm-up. Have yourself a wonderful rest of your week. If you're listening south of the border, happy Thanksgiving, and have a great rest of your week. Final score from Detroit: Flames fall 2-1 in overtime. This has been your Flames Talk postgame show, available wherever you get your podcasts, and this has been Calgary Flames Hockey on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.